Welcome back to Motivation Minute. I'm Spencer Harrow. I'm joined here by my friend, Jeriah Miller.
What's up?
Hey, we're here to talk about an awesome book. I loved this. It's Essentialism. And the subtitle is The Disciplined Pursuit of Less.
So did this exceed your expectations?
Oh, totally. I mean, you'd been saying, hey, this is a great book. You know, my parents read it. I got it. And, you know, you got to read this book. And I'm like, well, I guess I could. And I didn't think there was a lot that I didn't know what I would get out of it. But no, this was really good. It actually put to language a lot of things that I kind of understood, but also gave me new challenges for my personal time management and knowing how to prioritize things in life.
Yeah, this is also interestingly a book that my dad and my mom both read, and my dad bought 10 copies and gave them to friends and family.
That must be pretty good as a book.
Yeah.
So this is one of many books we've been reading this year. We're doing this podcast series where we go through a book every week, and our goal is to get through 52 books this year if we can, because, you know, reading a book a week and spending more effective time on reading books by using a skim read approach is what we do. And we're hoping to get through more books in less time that way and reap the benefits. So how about we get started?
All right. Sounds good.
So we're going to change the flow of the podcast slightly this time because, you know, what do you think? I mean, my favorite part of the podcast tends to be where we actually get personal and ask about, you know, how we're going to change this in our lives or what our number one takeaway is. Is that one of your highlights, or what's your perspective?
Yeah,
on that?
I think it flows better. People tend to like it better when we just talk, I guess.
The hard thing is when we get talking and it takes time, and, you know, we get up into like 50-minute podcast lengths. Well, you know, that's a little bit longer than some people might want to listen to, don't you think?
Yeah,
I mean, who wants to listen to us talk for 50 minutes?
No, yeah, it's humbling if someone likes us so much they want to listen to us.
They almost have to split it up or, you know, quit listening halfway through, and yeah. We don't want to do that.
So we're going to have to, I think we have to have a balance of sticking to our main points, but also having some conversation.
So maybe we should make it like multiple mini things of what we've been doing already. So like the whole idea was we like the question, then the number one takeaway, but, you know, what if we were to try, like, you know, we each pick a few points out of, you know, what we read that we took away that was the most important, and then we try to ask a question on that particular point or have a really good conversation going back and forth on that, and essentially have multiple takeaways, not just one at the end, but focus on the concepts and not just, you know, going through every point that we found interesting in the book. What would you think?
All right, let's try that. We'll see how it goes. I'm not sure how
well. We'll make an experiment this time.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, so I'm going to start off with a quote. And I noticed we both have this quote as our, like, I mean, this as our first note, which is...
And, you know, that must mean it's pretty good, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's, if you don't prioritize your life, someone else will. And I'm going to start with an interesting story about this. So, I was just visiting some friends down in California, and I was asking... the dad of this family, they have a bunch of kids, and I...
They're like a band, right?
Yeah, they're a family band, and I was asking him, you know, some tips, you know, for, you know, for parenting, or, you know, because they have some really, really good family dynamics, and he said just a basic principle is whoever wants your kids the most will get them. So if Hollywood or Coca-Cola wants your kids more than you do, they're going to get them. And the idea how this applies to your time, I think, it talked about in the book is, you know, if you don't prioritize your life, somebody else will. If you don't want your time more than other people then they're going to take control of you. And it's interesting. So it's actually possible that somebody else values your time more than you do.
So it's almost like to combat that, you have to come up with a systematic discipline of discerning what would be essential. It's not like time management is the key or productivity is the key. It's really stripping back the things that are not essential and leaving what is most important. I think that's probably the key to overcome that.
Yes, and also being able to say no. There's a whole bunch of tips in this book. It's very interesting. So I guess I could start with a personal example. A couple years ago, I was playing music for our worship team. And I like music, and I played guitar since I was 12, and I really loved doing it. But somewhere along the line, I began to feel obligated, like this is something I have to do, I have to play music. And I and eventually it became something that I almost hated to do. And I felt like people were the other people on the team were taking advantage of me, like, you have to be there, you're expected to be there to practice. And I almost felt like a victim, and I didn't realize till later, but that was not anybody's fault except for mine, that I was letting other people have control over my time, and they weren't trying to do it. Other people aren't intentionally trying to take advantage of you, but it's just that I wasn't able to say no. I wasn't able to find out what my priorities are.
I guess the challenge there is it was like trying to figure out when to make a trade-off.
I guess, but it was even just things that you realize you're doing that you don't want to do, but you're doing it for other people's sake. You're not able to say no. You don't value your own time enough.
So that's a really good point because, you know, life is like a four-burner stove. You've got family, friends, health, and work. They're all on those burners. And inevitably, you're going to have to turn off one to two burners because you can't run all those burners at once and be able to multitask in all those areas without sacrificing some part of your life and feeling a victim to it. So it's like, what problems do you want? Do you want to turn off family? Probably not, but some people might. Do you want to turn off friends? Well, you know, most people don't want to turn off friends. Do you want to turn off your health? Well, that's what a lot of people do because it's kind of the easier thing to turn off at this point. Yeah. And then, do you want to turn off work? Well, you know, you kind of have to work to make money. It's hard to make that choice. And so, just like you're saying, it's so easy to become victim to something that feels like it's a really good thing, but ends up taking our time that in a way that, you know, we can only focus on a couple priorities really effectively.
Yeah, like goes against the idea of balance. And everybody talks about balance all the time. But I think it's sometimes we can't have perfect balance. Like, do you value your family more or your work? And you have to make that decision. I mean, that's a tough decision. And,
you know, okay, circling back to your guitar thing. So do you think it was a thing where you had other priorities you wanted to focus on, and that's what was really driving you to not play? You were playing bass guitar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so driving you not to play bass guitar the same way? Or was there another reason about it?
It was because there's other things I wanted to do more, but I wasn't able to be honest with other people about what my priorities were, and I couldn't say no. So
essentially, you had like too many burners going, and one of them was bass guitar.
Exactly, and it was really my fault. Like, it's your own fault if somebody else is misusing your time. So, like, we fall victim to like learned helplessness, to where we think that's the way it is, and we forget that we can actually say no to things.
Right. Because so many people are there to hijack our life.
Yeah, they are. Not intentionally.
They go past our boundaries.
Not intentionally, but it's because we let them. So it's like an interesting concept is like we train other people how to treat us by the way we treat ourselves. So if you don't value your time, they're just going to be like, okay, well, let me just take advantage of that. Obviously, you know, he can benefit me in some way. But they're not trying to. It's just that you let them. So that was interesting. You know, if you don't prioritize your life, somebody else will.
There's a really cool example given in the book where they said, like, in the work world, people use our sprinklers to water their own grass. Isn't that so true? It's not like literally, but with time, where we need to set boundaries with people because inevitably they're going to use our life to help theirs in ways that may be a little bit overreaching. There's definitely points where you have to help others. But when that's all you do and you don't have time to focus on the things that are essential to your life, that you're going to get caught up in just the busyness of life rather than the important things.
Yeah, and we can all do this to somebody. You know, if we ask somebody to do something for us and they don't say no, well, okay, then, you know, we're going to expect that they help us. Like, they have to say no in order for us to know that they don't want to do it. Right?
I got a question for you. Do you think you're letting someone use, or something use your sprinkler to water its grass?
Right now?
Right now.
You know, I can't think of a really good example if somebody else is. But I think it can also be other things like social media. I guess social media would be a good example. Other people are commenting, liking, and messaging you maybe, and they're controlling your time instead of, it's kind of what we talked about in the last episode, notifications. If you're responding to your notifications, then you're letting other people control you. I mean, obviously there's a balance, but like you want to respond to some notifications, but if it's your mom texting you, but if you're
well,
just
that's
constantly,
a good thing, right?
If you're constantly, if you know, Instagram, Snapchat notifications are popping up and you're responding to everyone, that's being like you're not in control. You're letting other people control your life.
Did I send you a text this week with, it was an article on taking a trip without a GPS?
No, I don't think you did.
It was this interesting article about how, like, this guy was going on a trip. He's like, well, you know, what if I drove without my GPS? And he tried it. Like, he was giving an example of how he went home from the airport one time, and you know the way home from the airport, don't you? Well, he got lost. Well, not lost. He went the wrong way on the freeway when he wasn't using his GPS mm-hmm. because he just was not aware of where he was going. And okay. his realization was GPSs make you so focused on origin and destination and make the process disappear. Like, living in the present
really?
Is not important with a GPS because it's just getting you from point A to point B, telling you how long to get there, making that the most efficient process possible.
Wow.
But he took a road, an additional road trip where, like, he went like 300 miles or something, and he went 99 more miles, he said, than he had to, but it took him via a scenic road that he had to ask the locals about, get lost a little bit, find his way back. He was a lot more fulfilled at the end of that trip because
really?
He followed the process, not the most efficient way that the GPS would have said.
Interesting.
So
going on, I should do that. Go on a road trip with no GPS, and you could enjoy it more. Basically, is what you're saying.
And funny enough, I go to work, and I know the way to work. But I go to work with my GPS every time because there's something in me that says I gotta know what time I'll get to work.
Okay.
But do I really have to know what minute I'm going to get to work, even if there is traffic? I mean, what if I just wasn't so worried about picking the route that saved me 2 minutes? Which probably won't even save me 2 minutes. And what am I going to do with that 2 minutes that I saved that would be more productive than actually driving? I mean, really?
Wow. So basically, the GPS is an external factor that we're letting have control over our life. I mean, that's a little extreme, but, you know.
So I think that's for me. Like, I let that be the thing that picks the route for me. I let it find the most efficient way, and I follow it. But if I were to, you know, live life where I don't let things take me from A to B, without letting me enjoy the process of getting there,
yeah.
I would be a lot more fulfilled.
It's like choosing versus, we always say, oh, I have to do this, I have to do that. Well, in reality, it was, you know, it's your choice ultimately, to long term. And so you have to go from, I have to, I choose to do this, right?
Right, making that mental decision rather than having something else
yeah.
make it for you, which there was another thing I was reading this week about how devices now are being built so that we don't have to think. Like, you know, it'll order, you can like order, so like a virtual assistants, you can say, hey, call an Uber, and the virtual assistant calls the Uber. But that takes out that whole process of like finding the Uber app, clicking and seeing like how far the nearest Uber is from you, and then clicking the type you want, checking the prices, checking the routes, seeing if maybe Lyft might be better. The whole idea is trying to minimize that time to get to what you're trying to do. And then what do you do with that extra time? Well, we just stay unproductive. We watch a TV show, or, you know, we don't read a book or something usually. I mean, we do mindless stuff in that time that
wow.
we saved. And we think we saved time, but really we're making it worse on ourselves.
Interesting.
Not enjoying that whole process of like finding a different app than
yeah.
Uber when you're looking for a car and then going on a whole different path that would have been
funny.
So much better for you.
We're getting an app to save time in another app. Yeah, so that's why people are going back to, you know, the movement of, you know, simple life, or, you know, people are getting into, you know, sustainable lifestyles, or doing less, going back to the, you know, old-fashioned way, I guess, in some ways, because, you know, all these things that are supposed to make our lives easier in some ways can actually make them more difficult and stressful. Anyway, so, yeah, that goes towards that idea is, you know, how there's so many things in our life in modern days that are trying to take our time, and everybody's selling things. We see so many ads. I saw something where it said we see like 1,000 or 2,000 ads every day. We don't even realize it. And so, you know, people are trying to sell us things and trying to get us to say yes all day long. So you have to learn how to say no without feeling guilty. And for some reason, we have this guilt associated with saying no to things. But that's, we can't have that, you know. We can't feel guilty for saying no, because there's a trade-off. If you say yes to things now, which aren't that important, they're just little favors here and there. You say yes to those, and you say yes to too many of them. In the future, it's, you're gonna have to say no to the actual important things.
But, you know, let's face it, we're going to end up saying yes to too many things most of the time. And the thing we have to deal with is how we're going to cut our losses, right? Because okay. I think the main point is that we need to admit our failure before we're able to begin any kind of success. So, like, suppose you had, like, a $50 Lyft ticket and a $100 Lyft ticket, and you bought them both, and then you suddenly find out that you can only use one of them. And you know that the interesting thing is the $50 resort, you're going to enjoy more than the $100 resort. But you spent $50 and $100.
Mm-hmm.
Which one will you give up and which one will you take?
Yeah, that's a hard decision. I think.
Why is it a hard decision?
Well, because you spent more money, you don't want to lose the money, but you're going to enjoy the $50 one more, right?
Right. So, that's the thing. You have to cut your losses at some point, because you could go to that $100 ticket, and that's what I think most people would do. They spent more money on it, they'll go to it. But the whole idea is that when you go there, you're just going to be miserable when you are there. And so if you're going to be miserable at the $100 resort when you could have had a great time at the $50 one, go to the $50 one and lose the $100 because it's already lost anyhow. Like, you're not going to enjoy it anymore because you know you got your money's worth if you're going to be miserable in the process. That's just not a good trade-off.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting concept.
So I think it circles back to that point that you were saying, that we take on so many things in our life, and it's trying to figure out which ones that are important or which ones we need to cut. And when we make a cut, make sure you make the cut in the right places.
Yeah, so I think we have so many good opportunities a lot of times, or they seem like good. Like, I could do that. I could help my friend out. I could do this. And we have these, like, that'll give us a benefit, whatever benefit, for doing something. And they're good, right? But it said in the book that good is the enemy of great. And if you do, you can either have good or great. You can't have both. So if you're doing so many good things, you'll never be able to do something that's great. It said for every 100 good opportunities that you get, you should say no to 99 of those.
Oh, that's a hard thing to do. I mean, personally, that's something I do struggle with, because if you have so many good opportunities, it's like, I might as well do them all because they're good for me. But there's only so much we can all handle in the long run. Like, you can handle multiple sleepless days trying to get so many good things done. But the thing is, that's not sustainable. So yeah. Trying to prioritize the one thing, or the, you know, top 1% that's important, oh, that strikes home, because...
Well, it's super hard.
Yeah, it's so hard to make that decision. It's like, what criteria do you use? I mean, how would you make that decision?
Yeah, well, I guess I would think about, okay, what do I really want to do? What do I feel is the most important? What is something that I might feel slightly obligated to do? And basically cut out those, and I don't know. Yeah, it's a hard
decision. I guess
there's
money, too, as a factor. Like, mm-hmm. What's the most expensive or inexpensive thing, or how much time is it going to require?
Yeah, but I think deep down we know which is actually the most important. But we don't want to give up. We don't want to say no. Like, for some reason we have our... I guess it depends on your personality a little bit, but... For me, I just can't. It's so hard to tell somebody no, or to tell an opportunity no. And I think there's phases in our life. Like, I think if you're younger, you should be trying more things. You should be experimenting, you know, working. But it's, you know, maybe you have to, you know, and say yes. You know, you can't just... It's if you don't have as many opportunities, then you're gonna have to say yes to more of those. But it said in the book that saying yes to everything may help you succeed in the beginning, but it will cause you to fail in the end.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, we were talking about how, like, saying no is hard too. Sometimes you don't have to be like a firm no. It can be a no that appears like a yes, but it's like a deferred yes. So you say, you know, no, I can't do that right now, but it's a priority for me and I'd like to do it. Let's schedule a time in the future.
Okay, that, yeah. Instead, yeah, that, I like that. So making a little bit of a compromise, like, hey, I can't do all of this, but I can do a little bit, right?
Right. So you keep yourself down to your top, was it 90 or 99%?
It said 99, but it's, you know, it's extreme example.
Yeah, so like use that
to
top 1% and throw away the 99, but then you can keep that 99 in sort of like your someday pile that you can pull out the most important from that. And it's like an idea source. If you run out of that 1% to do, I mean, you're hardly going to run out of that 1 out of 100 things to do.
Yeah.
But if you ever do, you can go back to that idea list and be like, hey, what could I do?
This is theoretical. It's easy to talk about and hard to do. But yeah, the next point here that kind of ties into that is less is more, or less is better. So, and that's interesting. So how can less be better?
Well, I think the way less is better is because you're focusing on the right thing for the right reason at the right time. There was a sweet schematic in the book that had like right thing, right reason, right time all together. And then the opposite, which would be like everything now that's popular.
And I think that's what we do, is we focus on all the best opportunities. We want them right now.
Yeah. And we want to know what everyone else is doing and be in the know.
Wow. And we can't do that.
And when we stay on the things that are right in terms of the right thing to do, the right time to do it, the right reason, we end up committing to things that are actually meaningful and have measurable value and results associated with them.
And there's going to be sacrifices, consequences, you know. You might not be able to spend as much time on your work if you're focused on family. You know, that just
right.
is a sacrifice.
But
you have
if
to
you
make.
Spread yourself too thin by trying to do everything, you risk having no impact at all.
So a great analogy here is I heard about this in a different book, but it said, so you, let's say, you know, you're on an island which represents where you are right now, and then there's another island which represents where you want to go. So you start building a bridge, so you, whatever that is, to get there, you know, your business or so whatever you want to achieve is that island. So you start to build a bridge, you work hard, you get halfway through, and you decide, you know, I want to change paths here. I want to try a different technique. This isn't working the best. So you start building another bridge, and you get it 1/3 of the way. And then you start a new one, and you become close to completing that bridge. And then, so you've spent all of this time, all of this effort building all these bridges, but you haven't gotten anywhere. You haven't reached the island.
And it sounds like the bridges have gone past the island by now.
Pretty
in cumulative sum.
Yeah, it would have been way more if you would have put all that energy in one bridge. Or a basic mathematic principle is if you're going, you know, 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 all in a separate area, so just equals 1, right?
Right.
In each, but if you can add all those together, it's like, you know, it'd be like 10 in one direction. So it's like if you do less, if you focus all your energy into one thing, you can get so much further than you ever could by trying to do a lot of different things. It's not mathematically possible to get anywhere doing a lot of different things.
I guess that part of the reason that it's tempting to keep switching is because we set our goals way too big. And part of the thing is that an essentialist, which is the person who focuses on getting the right things done, they set small wins that they can celebrate, like small goals. They're not trying to force the big thing. So they're not trying to get the bridge all the way to the other island. They're trying to just get another foot done on the bridge the best way they can, another foot done on the bridge, chunk by chunk. And by doing that, they create momentum, which is far more powerful than hitting one big goal, don't you think?
Yeah, as long as you're, it's hard to stay on the track though with one thing. Like we it becomes old or boring. We want something new, so we start a new path. But that's going to cost you a lot of time instead of just focusing on one thing, sticking with that thing, and eventually you'll get there. Otherwise, you're going to start so many different paths, and you're never going to get anywhere.
Okay, I saw a really small thing in the book that was interesting. Side note here. You know, we all set like New Year's resolutions and we never end up getting most of them done. Well, one thing that I'd set a while back was, hey, I'm going to start a 5-year journal, because my mom's been writing a journal ever since I was born. She's got like the weather every day, the meal we had for dinner, and everything that happened that day in a 5-year diary.
Crazy.
And she does it, she's got it accounted for every day of my life. Well, I tried to do it myself, and it was miserable, at least for me, because I tried to write way too much. But the thing I found about this book was the author said you can actually maintain a journal or anything you do by writing less than what you feel like. And that's what you need to do to sustain the habit. Because if you write less than what you feel like, it keeps it short and sweet, and you want to come back to it.
It's like, I could do more, but you like limit yourself. No, let's just do it, keep it easy, right?
So simple. I realized with life, like, there's so many things that I feel like I have to do it the right way the first time and do like so much towards that goal. But what if I were to step back and say, I'll do a little bit less than feels right to me, and that will sustain me so that I want to come back to that task rather than just do a lot and then, you know, put it aside for a long time before I come back to it. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it goes right along where it says that the concept of essentialism teaches you to become an editor of your own life and intentionally cutting out certain things, doing less, like you said. And it gave an example, which is interesting because I can speak about it from personal experience. And it's editing, a video editor. So just editing anything or like editing audio like you're doing for this podcast. But for me personally, editing videos for my business, it's all about removing. So when you're editing, you have a whole bunch of footage that you start off with, and making a good video is all about removing. So you never add something because you already have the things there.
Right.
You remove, and the more you remove, the better it gets. Like, I'll sometimes go back to a video that I've edited a month ago, and I'll remove like so many things, and it's just way better. The more you can remove, the simpler you can make it, the better it gets, which is really interesting.
It's back to that 90-10 or 99-1, because if you can leave that 1%, I think it's actually like it was a 90% rule. 99 seems like it's a little high. For some reason, I read like the 90% rule where you set on a scale of 1 to 100 and then anything less than 90 you throw out. I don't know. Maybe it's okay. Less than 99, less than 90.
Yes.
I think it's less than 90. That's what I wrote down from the book.
So it said, yeah, for every decision you do, you consider, look at the most important ones, like a value between 0 and 100. You know, if you're sorting out your closet, you would, you know, calculate the likelihood of you ever wearing that clothing again. If it's like,
that sounds like me. That's what I would do.
Calculate. If it's below 90%. So if it's like, yeah, there's a 90% chance I'll wear that again. Well, that's actually pretty low if it's for your clothes, you know. So if it's lower than 90%, you basically throw it out, or you don't keep it anymore.
I think some people listening would actually laugh because I do that, you know, with a lot of things. Calculate the percent likelihood I'll do something.
Yeah, you would
again.
Do that, being an engineer.
It's kind of the way I am.
Yeah, I think we should all do that more. And it also gave the example of Southwest Airlines again, like the last book, which is interesting. So Southwest has a lot of interesting things they did. So they only had one plane. Was it the 737?
Right.
So whereas other airlines have like a whole bunch of different planes. But with Southwest, they only have one plane. They just train their pilots to fly that one plane, so it's all the same. They don't serve meals on the planes, or at least they didn't to start. They didn't have some of the luxuries. They didn't have first class. They didn't have
assigned seating.
No assigned seating. You just find your seat. And people thought that was, you know, a crazy idea. It would never work.
Right. Totally upset the industry.
Because they removed all the options, it made it successful.
So it's the whole idea, less is more. It's like back to the editing, you were saying the more you chop, the better it is. So you sit with like this super nice interview with someone, and it's an hour long, your interview, but you really want to make that 10 minutes or less. And when you cut out the things that aren't as essential and leave the parts that have the biggest rate of return, it turns into a better product. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's scary to cut because the more you cut, the more you feel like someone could have benefited from that one little piece, or maybe they would have liked that. But
it really
comes down to what's important.
That's a huge mindset with video editing, and I think it applies to your life, is when you're editing a video, or like, I want to keep this part, and like, I don't want to remove this part because it could, because it's a good clip, but good is the enemy of great. And so if you want it to be a good video, you have to cut out 90% of everything and make it as short as possible, and that's going to make it interesting, entertaining. It's going to get the main points. It's kind of like reading the books that we're doing. We're not reading the whole book from cover to cover, right? We're just getting the main points of the books. And that's why we can read so many of these books, is because we don't focus on all the other good things in the book. We only read the great things, the main points.
Right. And when we take those main points, because that's the thing you would remember anyhow. So if you spend the time remembering what you would have remembered, you can save time to pursue other things and read other books. Because otherwise, you may be reading the same book for weeks, but in our case, we can do it in one night.
Wow. Such an interesting concept of is less is more. And it applies to, I think, every area of our life. If we could do that instead of doing the trivial many versus the vital few, is how we put it in the book.
There was an interesting art example I saw in the book about a New York company, how, you know, we're talking about how if you do less, it's more. Well, they have a day where they don't let their employees look at email or take phone calls. And it's one day a month on a Monday where all they do is they think and they talk about how to solve problems in the company. And by letting the employees focus on those things, they're pretty much locked in the room talking about the problems that need to be fixed. They're far more efficient than when they were distracted by so many other things. So they focus on what's critical and let other stuff go to the side. And then they pick it up on the other days. But just taking that little bit of time, one day a month, to focus on what's important has dramatically impacted their business.
That's
think of how we can do that
day.
In our life.
Yeah.
One small change. Just one.
I can think of so many. Just social media is one obviously easy example. But how much time we spend, like, you can get this app that shows you how much time you spend on your phone, and for the average, it's like four or five hours a day. Like, 4 hours a day
looking
at your phone?
It's probably way more than you think. Yeah.
Looking at your phone for 4 hours a day is just crazy.
I've seen apps, too, for, like, Google Chrome, where it monitors the websites you've been on and how long you're on certain genres of websites. Like, if you were on social websites or email websites, you can break it down into percentages. And I've looked at that before and been like, whoa, look at the how much time I spent on these kinds of websites versus these, and it was way more than I thought. You know, you think, oh, I'll take a minute to look at this, but it turns into 15 minutes, way more than you thought. Just having to learn how to prioritize is important. Do you want to talk a little bit about buffer time?
Yeah, I'm excited about this.
This was super good. There was a quote at the top of the buffer time chapter that I absolutely loved. It's attributed to Abraham Lincoln, and he says, "Give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, and I'll spend the first four sharpening the axe." Think about that. If we were to take more time to prepare, or more time to add a little buffer to a project we have to do something that's effective, that would change how we execute any project.
Okay. So adding more time on purpose, that almost like seems like the opposite. It would just make it's too much, or that's interesting.
Well, the thing is, like, I am known for underestimating the time it will take me to do just about anything. And,
same here.
You know, sometimes I even double in my head what I think it's going to take, and I still can't meet that goal. And the book says, you know, add 50% to what you think a task will take. I need to add 150% probably.
Wow. So this is interesting. So it's a little bit counterintuitive, but it's so much time. So giving a 50% buffer time. So it goes back to kind of saying no or prioritizing. So if you have something to do, someone asks you to do something, and you think, and they'll say, oh, it'll only take an hour. Like someone asked me, like, you can do this really, really quickly. Like, just help me out really fast.
Yeah.
You're like, and you have to think, no, it's not going to be really fast. Nothing is really fast. You have to plan a little bit extra time, like a buffer time. If you think it's going to take an hour to do something, assume it's going to take an hour and a half.
Right. It's with time. It's with money. If you think something's going to cost X amount of dollars, increase that by 50% before you go shopping.
Yeah.
And that way you're not surprised by costs being so high.
If you
need to prepare for a test or prepare for anything, add 50% to the time you'd spend preparing, or add 50% to the preparation you think you need.
A great motto to live by is everything costs more money and takes more time than you think.
That's really good. I like that.
Yeah, so you have to prepare for it. It's under-promising and over-delivering. And most of the time we do the opposite, especially in business. We'll say, like, I can promise you all these things because we can do it. Like, I'm going to make you an amazing video for your business.
The promise is the easy part. You know, it's so easy. You can just say it.
I'm going to give you a really good deal. You're going to be happy. We're going to promise you this and that to try to sell them. But then most of the time, it doesn't work out how you planned. And so you end up not able to quite deliver as well. And you promise your time, and then you feel obligated. And so it's better to under-promise, to not even say like what you could do. Just like under-promise a little bit. And then you can over-deliver, or at least meet your promise.
And then you have time for the spontaneous things that come up. So if you had, let's say you're going to the airport and it takes you, you know, you need like, say, 2 hours at the airport to prepare for your flight. I mean, some airports you need that now. It's getting to be long security lines and stuff. Well, you give that full 2 hours. You don't try to shortcut it with an hour and a half. Or you add a little bit more than 2 hours. I don't know.
Yeah.
Depends on the airport you're in. And you get through security, and that leaves you time if someone comes up to you and starts a really good conversation. You get a new networking contact, suppose. Well, you couldn't have had that conversation if you tried to cut your time way down. Now, granted, I do like to cut my time way down and minimize the time I'm at the airport so that I pretty much walk on the flight, you know, not quite when the door closes, but if I could, I would. I like to spend as little time in the airport as possible. And, you know, I can't. When security takes longer than I expected, it puts me behind and makes it a little bit nerve-wracking. But I like the challenge of that time. But if I were to just step back and say, give a little bit more time so that I can just let things happen, mm-hmm. that would change a lot, I think, and give some opportunity for interactions, for example, that I wouldn't have had if I had not been willing to give that time.
Yeah. And so giving more time, in a sense, is actually doing less. Because if you're adding more time, obviously you can't do as many things, which is the whole point, is to add more, give yourself more time to do less things. And as far as less, so you can do focus on the important things, and you're not doing trivial things. And also, yeah, there was a point in the book, it said, don't make a huge to-do list, like this, and this. All these things you have to do in one day. Just write down a couple things, two or three things, and that way you can get those things done. I had an interesting quote, it said, we overestimate how much we can get done in a day, but we underestimate how much we can do in a year. So if we focus on the important things, the most vital things, we'll get so much done in a year if we give ourselves that time to do it.
Isn't that so true? Because it's so easy to lose track of your long-term goals, and time just flies by because mm-hmm. we get in the rhythm of life.
If we want everything now. Routine. We want to do it now. Like, let me just get it done all today, all tomorrow, get everything done. But it doesn't work that way. Like, you need to look at the long term.
It's the few things we set every single, you know, day that are normal to that day, that are the habits we set, that stick with us and produce the greatest effect. Like, I was talking about how I tried to maintain a 5-year diary, but did not. I was not successful because I wrote more than I thought I needed to and got burnt out of it. My brother's the opposite. He started maintaining a diary, and he did less than he thought he could because there were small pages he had to do at first. And then he got a bigger one and kept the same discipline. And he does it every single morning now, just like my mom does. And I mean, I really admire that because I just don't have the patience to do that. But am I really using my time efficiently in that time where I'm not doing the diary, when I think, you know, I don't do the diary because I think I'll be more efficient by not doing it. But am I really more efficient by not doing it? I think that's something I need to work on.
Yeah. Wow. Like, we think we're saving time by doing lots of different things.
And what are we saving? Do we know if we're saving? Are we wasting the time in some other way?
But we feel like we're going to waste time if we only put one thing on our to-do list. Like, what am I going to do with all that other time? But in honesty, that way we can do those few things correctly, the right way.
And you live in like Montana, where there's not much traffic, but out here, like around rush hour, people get really crazy in their cars, where they're zipping around and trying to get around everybody. And I watch this guy like come around me super fast, and then he just works his way through the traffic up ahead of me. But by the time we get to like the next light, we're both sitting there. He did not gain anything by getting way ahead in all this traffic.
I think the takeaway I got is give yourself more time, so that then it's going to be give lots of benefits. You can enjoy your time. You can make sure you do it the right way. You know, you give yourself that buffer time, because there's always going to be unexpected things that happen that you can't prepare for. So if you give yourself extra time, and it almost is the same as saying no. So it's like someone asks you to do something, and you're like, oh, that'll take 2 hours. And they're like, no, you could do it faster. No, you have to say, no, it's going to take me 2 hours. Even though you right. could do it faster, you plan extra time.
And maybe you do get it done in 1 hour.
Yeah, then
but
great.
The whole point
great.
Is out of principle, you need to spend
anything.
More.
Yeah,
yeah, right. It's not about trying to always gain. It's about just making sure you don't lose all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because any extra time is just bonus.
Yeah. And it's the same as saying no. Sometimes you have to say no. And some people are good. Like, I mean, you could go extreme on both sides. You know, some people are just say no to, and they're just, you know, mean people. You know, sometimes I'm jealous of people like that because they don't have they can just say no. And I think in today's world, we have to be able to say no more because there's so many distractions.
Yeah. I think about, you know, we've gone back to this example of notifications on our phone quite a bit the last episodes. But I was kind of realizing, you know, we were talking just about how earlier in the episode, a GPS gets you from A to B and doesn't let you enjoy the process, right?
Mm-hmm.
So think about notifications. They pop up on your phone. They say, hey, you have a text from Jiraiya. And I'm like, oh, great. So I go click on this text from Jiraiya, and it takes me right to your text. Takes out the entire process of getting to your text. Takes me right to the point. And I'm like, okay, I got to get a text from Jiraiya. I write you back. I'm done. That took out any possibility of me finding something else on the way to looking at your text. As important as your text is, it took away the possibility of having some other notification that would have been more important. Oh, that would be terrible if something was more important than your text to me. But there might be something that is more important that I should see that would be yeah. more effective in that period of time. And then I go to your text.
But in a sense, you know, how do you balance that with, because you don't want to be doing trivial things. You want to do less things. So in a way, you know, technology helps us to do less things so we can get things done. But it all almost goes against it in a way. It's kind of
so it's like learning we need
paradox.
To make technology a tool, not a time management, or well, not a time management. It's a tool, not something we let drive us.
Yeah, it takes control to where it's controlling our life. Other people are, other things, technology, and we don't even have a choice in the matter. We just go along with it. So
this is only going to get worse.
Like I think a good example is to turn off your notifications. Take control. Instagram could be a great tool for your business or, you know, connect with
Facebook.
People maybe. Yeah, it can be a good tool if you turn off your notifications. You only check it when you're ready to check it.
Right, you could check it once a day. And, you know, people aren't going to care if you didn't get back to their message in 12 or 24 hours.
You feel obligated to reply right away. Who cares? It's your life. Don't let somebody else think that you have to respond. Or when somebody gets mad that you didn't respond, You know, who cares? Like, get over it.
Or even worse yet, now they have like read receipts. So you look at a text and it says that person read your text at 8 a.m. and you're like, wait, they didn't respond to me. What are they thinking? I hope they're feeling okay about me. And you get this whole game going in your brain about what they think about you. But really, maybe they just looked at it and forgot it. What if they just plump forgot it?
I would highly recommend turning off read receipts. That's what I did because I don't want people knowing when I read their text and wondering if, you know, if I'm going to respond, which I guess who cares? You know, it's you can't let somebody else control, you know, what somebody else thinks control you. But just,
like, and I had all those emotions about read receipts because I've had them all myself. Because if other people have read receipts, I'll sometimes look and be like, have you read my text? Have you read my text? Oh, you have? Okay. This happens sometimes. And then I'm like, what do you think about my text? Because they're just not responding. I'm like, what do you think? Are you just going to give me an answer or not? But
not that I
rather
think
than
about
just
that,
get worried about
I don't
that
even
process.
Want to see. I don't even want to see when somebody else read my text either. Who cares, you know?
Or you call someone up on the phone and they send you that auto reply like, sorry, I can't talk now. Or, you know, it's like that text you can send when you're
like,
calling someone. It's
been,
like a missed
I've been
text.
Some people like almost expect you to let you know about everything in your life. Like, you know, you don't have to know everything in my life. I mean, you know, maybe you're the type of person that wants that and that's great with certain people, but not everybody. You can't let other people, you know, whoever values, it's like goes back to the beginning. Whoever values your time the most is going to get it. If somebody else values your time more than you do, then they're going to get all of your time. As, you know, if somebody else values your kids more than you do, then they're going to own your kids more than you do. You're not going to be able to, your kids won't respect you because somebody else wants them more than you do, which is an interesting idea.
Man, this is really good. I wish we could go farther, but we're pushing our time now.
Yeah.
Hey, so much for thinking we could spend less time by doing this key points thing. We did okay, but we're still at 50 minutes.
Yeah.
We'll have to find... Hey, how about we put out an idea to our listeners? Tell us what you like the most. Send us an email in the... You can send us an email at... Is it info at Motivation Minute or is it hello at Motivation Minute?
Or they can just go to the website and...
Yeah, they can go to the contact us on the website. Tell us what parts of these episodes you really enjoy. If there's a certain part, what parts you don't like. We want to hear all the feedback.
Don't tell us those. Just the good parts.
Yeah, only give us biased feedback. And we'd love to just hear your thoughts because we're here to learn from you guys. So to conclude, just remember to check out our website, motivationminute.com, where you can see the latest episodes. You can see our Google Play and iTunes links there. Go to motivationminute.com/review and please leave us a review there and you'll be entered in for our next drawing coming up sometime in December for a free book.
You know, we really hope that you would read some of the books with us because we started this podcast as a way to learn ourselves. Unlike most things that I've done the last few years, this podcast has been something that I actually wanted to do. I'm not worried about how many followers we're going to get. I've really done it for myself, to be honest, but I'm just hoping that other people can learn with me.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it myself because I'm reading a whole lot more books than I ever was before I did this, and it's giving a really good accountability factor having you to work with here and keep reading. So it's really good.
Thanks, Spencer. So guys, if you want to learn how to read books fast, go to the website, motivationminute.com. You can download a checklist, and there's more information there. So
thanks, guys, for tuning into this episode, and we will see you again next week.